Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Modern Cotton Story, sponsored by E3 Sustainable Cotton. I'm Rachel Walters, BASF's Regional Grower and Channel Marketing Manager for North America Seeds and a host of today's program. Today, I'm hosting a special program to discuss many recent developments in the world economy, international trade, the war in Ukraine, and of course, the impact of the pandemic on the global business of cotton, textiles, and apparel. Also today, I'm joined by industry consultant Bob Anishak. Bob, how are you doing today?
Rachel, I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. Hope you are as well.
I am, Bob. As the school year wraps up here in North Carolina, it has been a full week, as I like to call it, of wrapping up everything. And I'm looking forward to the weekend of only having one soccer game. And that's it.
So, that's terrific.
Yes. So also today, I am really happy to introduce today's guest, Kim Glass. She is the president and CEO of the influential Fiber and Textile Association, one you're probably all aware of the National Council of Textile Organizations. So Kim, how are things with you today?
All right. Well, congratulations on making it to the final week of school in North Carolina and only one soccer game. So pleased to join you here, Rachel and Bob, and big shout out to E3 Sustainable Cotton for hosting this important discussion.
Well, thanks, Kim. Yeah, it's nice to be towards the end and take a little break over summer and just enjoy. So we're thrilled to have you. You also have an esteemed career in the textile industry and in government policy. These days, I know you're on the front lines of the international trade and government policies affecting our global sourcing of textiles and apparel from around the world and domestic manufacturing. But before we delve into the world of international trade and policy, Kim, I would really love to hear a little bit more about your background in case we do have some listeners that maybe missed the first time you were on the podcast and or others that would still like to learn more about you.
Well, thanks, Rachel. I came to the textile industry officially in this role about 3 years ago, but I've worked on textile and manufacturing issues for the entirety of my career. So I started off my career as a very underpaid Capitol Hill staff member eating ramen noodles to just get by and had about five roommates. I worked on Capitol Hill for two members of Congress from congressional districts that had seen a significant job loss in the manufacturing sector. So my hometown congressman from Buffalo, New York, I worked for him for 3 years, and a congressman from Northern Maine, where the paper sector particularly had been hard hit. I got to know the textile industry working on Capitol Hill, and under the Obama administration, was so pleased to have their support to serve as the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Textiles and Apparel at the Commerce Department for about 6 years, and then went on to run a sustainability organization, and then came to NCTO. So I do feel a great familiarity with this industry over the past couple decades of my career, and just really thrilled and honored to serve in this role at this time.
Your background really had a very wide range of experience, and obviously have worked in a lot of manufacturing industries, textiles and paper and so forth. And I do know you're just coming off your annual meeting last week, and I'm sure there were lots of things that you were talking about at that meeting. I'd be curious just to know, what were the big issues that you saw? And also, what are members talking about in terms of the challenges that they're facing today in doing their business?
Yeah, we had a great annual meeting. You know, Bob, the world turned upside down a couple of years ago when we had to cancel our annual meeting in Washington due to COVID-19. So we really haven't had an annual meeting with our industry for 3 years, even though I've seen industry during that time. So I think it was a great reflection. A, we missed each other a great deal. there's so much going on in our industry right now and the velocity of issues associated with our sector. you know, obviously we're reading in the headlines and experiencing the inflation issues, the worker shortage issues associated with COVID. But there were also some broader policy themes that our conference really brought to the forefront. One is the Uyghur Forced Labor Act associated with ethical cotton and sourcing of cotton and cotton yarn from Xinjiang, which of course has received international news and concerns associated with the international community. Actually, the Biden administration noted that this is a form of genocide. That was really important for our members to understand because a lot of our members source cotton from the United States and a lot of our regional trade partners source cotton from the United States. And so supply chains are pivoting in anticipation of the implementation of that. We also talked about de minimis, which I can get into a little bit more later, but essentially a loophole in our trade policy that allows products to come in duty-free right to your doorstep. Through Amazon and other e-commerce distributors. We talked about seizing the opportunity as supply chains are shifting to help bolster more investment in the United States and within our regional trade agreements, including Central America, which is going to experience one of the most significant investments as a result of the supply chain pivot. So I think, you know, just thinking about both our offensive opportunities and areas where whoever would have a playbook on a once in a lifetime pandemic, the kind of extremes that have faced our industry from pivoting to PPE to like the ongoing policy debates to the issues associated with our economy right now. I mean, I think it was a timely discussion and we were pleased to have top level administration officials join us and be part of this important conversation.
Real quick, Kim, what's your sense of the discussion over Chinese tariffs? I saw a piece in the Washington Post this morning and it just got me thinking about it.
Yeah, and that certainly was on the forefront too. We had Ambassador Bianchi, the deputy USTR, join us and, you know, there's clearly a lot of conversation happening within the Biden administration right now about what to do with these tariffs that were levied under the Trump administration on a whole host of products, including our product segment. So textile and apparel finished products. We also have some inputs on the list that are not available in the U.S. We have textile machinery on the list that's not available in the U.S. And I think the Biden administration is considering an approach. And I, as with any administration, I think there are different arms of the government who have a different perspective about what to do. And our industry has strongly supported USTR's methodical approach to addressing some of these pervasive predatory trade behaviors from China. And we dismiss the notion that tariffs somehow have contributed to the inflation crisis that American consumers are facing. No one is standing at the gas pump these days complaining about the cost of their underwear. They're complaining about the cost of gas prices or food prices. And our industry is a deflationary industry. So let me just play that out for a second because it's an active conversation that we're having with the administration. In the 1960s, 10% of our income went to purchasing apparel or home goods for our homes. And today it's about 2.7% of our income. And in 1960, 95% of our apparel was made here in the United States. Now it's 2%. So this has come at a great cost to the industry where we seek the lowest cost providers, including those in China, to source our products. And our industry has been at the tipping point in terms of the predatory trade practices of China. So we are urging the administration strongly to keep the tariffs on finished textile and apparel products because we are seeing a recalibration of these supply chains, both to the US and to the hemisphere, and to reject this notion that somehow lifting the tariffs on finished textile and apparel will actually help American consumers. It won't. In fact, unit prices out of China for textile and apparel products, have decreased 25% since the tariffs have been in place and have decreased 50% since 2011. So the Chinese continue to subsidize their industries. And we need to educate lawmakers, we need to educate key administration officials that they need to dismiss these Trojan horse arguments and stick with our industry and hold China accountable long term.
Thank you for that, Kim. And Bob, thanks for the follow-up question there. I would like to mention that BASF is a member of NCTO. So I would like to ask you maybe a little bit more around this trade thing of, do you feel that international trade is a positive or negative force in the world? And maybe can you outline a few more of the key factors in the domestic trade policy that are affecting the cotton industry today?
So first, Rachel, we're so pleased to have BASF as a member of NCTO and really want to elevate the work that you all do that is so incredibly important to our domestic manufacturing base, as well as some of our international trade partners. You know, those questions about whether trade is good or not, you know, it's complicated. It's like a relationship status with a boyfriend or girlfriend where you're not quite sure if it's going to work out. You know, for our industry, international trade is essential for our Western Hemisphere trade partners. We wouldn't have a domestic textile industry without our strong relationship with our Central American partners, Mexico and Canada, because we export a lot to these areas we export to our Western Hemisphere trade partners. So it's a vital supply chain for our members and for this industry. And it was the vital supply chain that literally retooled their operations overnight to making PPE. And it's a counter to the Asian supply chain that doesn't use US inputs, that doesn't use, doesn't play by the same environmental and labor rules. So for our industry, I would say that is essential. But secondarily, international trade at times have significantly harmed our workers and our manufacturing sector. And that's why this conversation, whether it's about China, whether it's about Xinjiang, is critical to our industry to hold countries accountable and their governments for economic predatory trade behaviors. Are we doing enough? Are we addressing loopholes quickly? Are we ensuring that we do have a viable domestic competitive industry and holding others accountable? So it's a really complex problem that we as NCTO and as our textile industry have to actively engage in Washington to ensure that our voices are heard and the myriad of voices on a variety of issues for other sectors are heard so that lawmakers and key decision makers in the administration understand where we're coming from. On cotton in particular, you know, I think there's the issues associated with Xinjiang have been horrific. And going into the Beijing Olympics, you recall there are certain companies who condemned a participation or endorsing the Olympics associated with Xinjiang, and others didn't. The Biden administration didn't send their top officials to the Beijing Olympics associated with this horrific labor abuses and genocide that is occurring. And I think there's been great attention on the cotton supply chain in particular because of the pervasiveness of Xinjiang cotton in our global supply chains. 20% of the world's cotton comes from Xinjiang, connected to forced labor. And that cotton is exported to other areas of the world, particularly in Asia, made into a garment, and is sitting in our closets. It is pervasive. It's everywhere. Are we doing enough? The Biden administration has withhold release orders essentially to allow them to stop shipments where they know forced labor is being used. But you would imagine, given the pervasiveness of Xinjiang cotton, that we would see stop shipments everywhere because it's in a lot of our supply chains. And regrettably, do we have the tools that we need right now to effectively enforce the Uyghur Forced Labor Act, which Congress and the administration just signed into law? And do we have the tools and the enforcement to ensure that the withhold release orders are effectively enforced? That's a lot of burden to put on Customs and Border Protection but it's essential to helping ensure that the supply chains that we have are ethically sourced, that we are lifting up good labor practices and environmental compliance all at the same time. So our issues are constantly in the news, in the New York Times, on the front page of the Washington Post, in the Wall Street Journal, because of the cotton supply chains and the issues associated with cotton.
Well, Kim, I find this topic of trade policy to be just so interesting, and it feels, you know, so important to so many industries. I think Bob's going to take the next question, but I really do appreciate you giving some insight and your perspective there.
Thank you, Rachel.
Kim, as a follow-up to your Sinjan questions, there's been a lot of buzz about Uzbekistan cotton coming back into the marketplace. Do you have any opinions about that?
Yeah, and there's a lot of concerns about that, Bob, as well, you know. And so, again, Xinjiang is what is making the news. but there's other areas of the world that we have to be mindful of as well.
Well, other than cotton, I guess everyone seems to be really preoccupied with, of course, the economy right now in general. And I think people are worried about stagflation coming in. And of course, we have high inflation. But for those not familiar with the term stagflation, it's basically when you have low growth or negative growth in rising prices. It's something that we saw back in the 1970s with the oil crisis. Anyway, we're now at a point where, because of the extraordinary circumstances of COVID, and now we have a major war in Europe and so on, we're looking at an economy that's showing signs of stress and overheating. There's, you mentioned before, Kim, labor shortages. Some of the folks in the trade have been focused on that as well. So, having said that, I'd be curious on your take on the economy, inflation, and so forth. Do you see it as a transitory kind of thing, or a transitional kind of thing, or is it something that's going to be around for a while?
Bob, I think COVID created the economic constraints that many of us are feeling right now in ways that we probably wouldn't have even anticipated at the start of the pandemic. And it's almost like a perfect storm, right? We had a lot of workers leave the workforce or change jobs entirely around the beginning of the pandemic. We have the supply chain crisis, right? We've started to see the exponential fees associated with freighting products. We are seeing products that are not on our grocery store shelves, like baby formula, being a top priority to backfill. There are things that I think I wouldn't even have anticipated 3 weeks ago about the challenges we're facing. That's how dynamic our environment is. And that's why I said to you at the beginning of the podcast that I thought our meeting was well-timed, because the velocity of issues, of things that maybe we didn't even anticipate 6 months ago, are changing. And it's a warning to businesses that we don't know exactly what will happen here in terms of next steps. I heard the R word this morning. When I say the R word, I heard, this could be a lean to a recession. And, just think about that for a second. We went from 2020 shutting down everything and retooling where we could in order to help make products that our healthcare workers needed, to this velocity of demand that came back because American consumers were starting to spend more, starting to see their friends and family, to this paradigm where gas is $6 a gallon in some areas of the country, if not more. I don't know how this is all gonna turn out and what the next 6 months, 9 months horizon looks like. But I think there's enough warnings in the economic signals right now that we should be mindful about our businesses and about our workers moving ahead. And I wish I had a crystal ball, but I will tell you, since COVID started, I think my crystal ball has been broken. You know, I mean, I keep polishing it, and the super glue is it only works so much. But, you know, I think we just need to be cautious in this kind of environment about planning for our own needs, but also planning in our work lives.
Do you have any opinions on how the Federal Reserve should act in these tough times?
You know, I think this is above my pay grade in terms of monetary currency policy, as well as, you know, interest rates. But I think the Federal Reserve needs to be, you know, very responsive in terms of what's happening, but not overly responsive where there's not an analytical, you know, discussion about what moves they make that could potentially alleviate some of the concerns. But we haven't faced something like this, like stagnation, as you mentioned, Bob, for decades. You know, we're in a kind of a new paradigm about how business operates. You know, we're starting to see real declines in the stock market affecting retirement savings, but also reflecting our bottom line. So I think this is going to take an all hands on deck approach to figuring out what are the levers in terms of our own policies associated with financing and whatnot to help address some of the systemic issues that American consumers and the American people are facing.
I see that President Biden is in South Korea today.
Yeah.
And talking about maybe some sort of a new trade or investment kind of agreement possibly in the region.
Yeah.
With that in mind, I wonder about when we're through the pandemic, and at some point we will, and when the economy sorts out and supply chains sort out, which they will eventually, are we going to find, in your opinion, the industry basically kind of snapping back, the industry meaning just the broader textile and apparel industry, kind of snapping back to their traditional way of sourcing? Or do you think a lot of the movement of product that's come into the Western Hemisphere is here to stay?
It's a great question. You know, I think we have to be a little cautious that if all of a sudden things go back to, quote, normal, which I'm not sure if that will ever be back to where we were 4 or 5 years ago. You know, how many brands and retailers will stick with sourcing closer to home or onshoring some of their sourcing? Right now, we're in an environment where people are just trying to get product. And I think a lot of people are looking to the U.S. industry and to the region about what more can you do? And this is sort of an environment where it's like it's almost emergency environment. Like, hey, we need products. What can we get and how quickly can we get it? I do think that COVID did expose some underlying problems of having too many eggs in the China basket. Mm-hmm. That there are certain brands and retailers who are recalibrating their entire sourcing model to de-risk out of Asia and actually do a lot more of sourcing long-term in the region. And those are, when I say the region, like Central America or Mexico, and those are very, very welcome conversations to have right now. This is why you're seeing $1 billion of textile investment in both the US and Central America this year alone. That's historic. More yarn spinning capacity is going in, fabric production, apparel production. Some of our news about investment actually came with the beginning announcement of Parkdale Mills investing $150 million in Honduras, but also in their Virginia facility, because people are looking for more products closer to home. They don't want to deal with the freight crisis. They don't want to deal with COVID-19 shutdowns in China, adding variables to their supply chains. And so we can be a huge part of the solution. And I really hope that for the long term, this is a trajectory that we see. But I will admit, Bob, that I think there's probably some folks who are here for a bit. And then if the world goes back to whatever normal is, we'll recalibrate to those old supply chains because of issues associated with price and other, you know, in terms of you know, price, unfortunately, in our industry is king. But we have a duty-free source right here in our region that we should be taking advantage of. So we would very much welcome working with brands and retailers, you know, who want to source closer to home and putting together the supply chains necessary.
Do you see the economic development in Central America that we've seen in the last year or two helping with the migration crisis?
Absolutely. I mean, what the goal of this administration is to create economic opportunities for those in the Northern Triangle so that they're not leaving to find economic opportunities elsewhere, you know, into good paying jobs. We believe that our industry is the solution to helping create some of those economic opportunities. And it also serves as an economic opportunity for domestic manufacturers in the United States. So our supply chains are so intertwined with each other that the success of Central America, when I see import data showing that Central America by percentage point is outpacing China or Vietnam, I think that's fantastic because they're using a lot of US inputs. This is this strong co-production chain. It's an answer to Asia. So, you know, we're a heavy employer, you know, in both the U.S. and in the region. We support about 530,000 jobs in the U.S. There's 1.5 million jobs in Central America and our Western Hemisphere trade countries. And so the more economic opportunities that we're creating, which our industry is really, really leading the effort, the more that we're going to see a solution to some of the migration crises. Also, in addition, Bob, you know, when some of those investments go into Honduras or Guatemala or El Salvador, it comes with a suite of other things. A lot of manufacturers provide housing, they provide transportation, healthcare. You know, we need to look at the kinds of economic opportunities that exist in our sector as being a key part of addressing some of the migration issues.
Yeah, Kim, I appreciate this insight too. I'm just sitting here learning while you're talking about how all of this works together. And with whether, you know, these changes take place or not, where do you feel like sustainability and transparency fits in this cotton world going forward?
You know, I think both are incredibly important. You know, obviously we're dealing with climate change and the uncertainty associated with the agriculture sector, including cotton. You know, some states, when they experience a drought, you know, it certainly has a significant impact on cotton growing, both here in the United States, but more broadly. You know, I think environmental issues have continued to grow in terms of, you know, the visibility and on the radar of brands and retailers who are looking to ensure that they're sourcing more ethically and ensuring that they're, you know, supply chains are environmentally sound. You know, with the issues associated with cotton and traceability, I think because the Uyghur Forced Labor Act now requires importers to attest that their supply chains are ethical and that are not using forced labor, it is it actually has spurred a lot of really important questions. Where does this cotton come from for this T-shirt I want to source? Can we attest to the U.S. government that, in fact, this is a compliant supply chain? So we're going all the way back to cotton. And I think that traceability is another reason we're seeing more onshoring and nearshoring of these supply chains because of the use of U.S. cotton. In terms of the environmental issues, yeah, I think not just the pervasive issues with climate change, but I think greenhouse gas emission reductions, the use of pesticides, the other kinds of environmental issues are increasingly becoming important to certain brands and retailers who want to ensure that they're not contributing or they're taking public stances on ensuring that they are using much more environmentally compliant inputs. And I think that's a really healthy conversation because I think American consumers are asking these questions. Granted, there's a lot of things that sit in our closets today that are likely not sourced from, you know, areas of the world where there's sustainable cotton or ethical cotton, you know, and so I do want to be mindful that there is a great challenge to ensuring that does the bottom line on pricing, you know, really is price king over some of these other issues. But I do think over the last decade, particularly, and maybe over the last couple of years, given the issues with Xinjiang, this has become a much bigger issue for people who are looking to source key products.
We're out of time for today, but thank you for joining us. A really great discussion and really educational for me. And if our listeners wanted to reach out to you, if they had any further questions about the NCTO or the topics we covered today, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Yeah, well, thank you, Rachel. It's Kim Glass. So my email is kglass@ncto.org.
Wonderful. Well, also, I'd like to thank you, our listeners, for joining and hope you enjoyed our show today. Should you have any questions about the E3 Sustainable Cotton Program, you can email me at e3cotton@basf.com. And also, please follow us on social media at E3 Sustainable Cotton.